All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Train Smart Podcast. I'm Nick Young, the lead instructor of Velox Training Group. We've got our friend Max, who flies around, teaches with us. He's also the assistant instructor of Velox Training Group. Today, we've got a really special guest that you cannot see, but I can promise you he is a very special guest. I get to shoot with this guy from time to time and really enjoy training with him. Jeff, thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
So last week I put up in my Instagram stories, you know, like, hey, ask me a question. And there was one on there that I thought was really, really great for a topic for a podcast. And his question is, he shot a bunch of really bad matches, like back to back to back. And he said, this feels like the new norm for me, shooting a really bad match. How do I fix this? So it sounds like, you know, he's showed up to, I don't know, maybe four or five matches, and every single time it has not gone well. Now, this is like pretty broad in my opinion. So I think this could go several different, like what specifically went bad for him. Jeff, you and I actually squatted with this guy
at
match that we shot. Yeah. So I kind of have somewhat of an idea. Just after watching him a little bit, but I don't want to make this all about this guy. I want to make it about like, hey, so you've shot a couple matches, four or five matches, and like every time it's just sucking. Like, how do I get out of this rut? So, Jeff, what would you say like the first thing would be that you would start looking at? Say you shot four or five that just like you were not happy with.
Initially, I would ask myself, what process did I get to be here? And by process, I mean like my routine is probably another better way of saying it. Was I actually prepared for this match? And don't get me wrong, there's been plenty of matches where I wasn't prepared and I still went, because that's also a good learning point for myself. So the process, the first thing I would generally ask someone who's in a slump is, okay, what have you been doing besides, you know, we're going to use the match as an example. What have you been doing besides this match that got you to this point, right? Because everyone has to start from point A to point B all the way to, you know, Z. And usually that comes down to is, okay, tell me about your dry fire, right? What have you been doing dry fire wise? How often have you been doing it? The structure you're doing it to get you to where you're at. Because most of the time, what it comes down to is people think they're dry firing correctly when majority of the times they're not. Right? Are you confirming your dry fire with live fire? And you can't just have matches as your live fire, because then that's just, it doesn't work out that way.
So when you say dry firing correctly, what do you mean by that?
Once again, this match, right? This guy, and when I say this guy, this is applying to most people who are in this situation. You go to a match, you shot like shit, you're in a slump. Well, okay, how do you get out of it? Well, first off, what'd you learn from your match? That's the biggest thing, right? What did you do so poorly that made you perform poorly at the match? Did you take note of what you were bad at, what you were good at, what you did really well, what you did really shitty at? And then did you structure your dry fire to, one, build your confidence in the things you're good at, but primarily the things that you are bad at? Right. No one wants to focus on the stuff they suck at, because it's not a good feeling when you're trying to get over a hump and you just keep sucking.
Yeah. Well, and sucking means something different to no matter who you are. Right. I mean, I think that's an important point. There is, are your matches bad because your times are really slow? Are your matches bad because your accuracy sucks? Is it some of both, which makes it a little bit more complicated? But yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. That's two different practice modes, depending on what sucked. And it may not be as easy as that to identify, but you have to identify it a little bit.
And that's the hardest part, right? Because we're talking about something that is so open-ended that me telling you the answer is not necessarily the answer you need, compared to like what you say, Max, or what you say, Nick. Like, we all speak different ways of how we do the same thing. So sometimes it's actually identifying it that's the biggest issue.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the great things about USPSA or shooting any match, quite honestly, is like you can go on Practice Score and look at all of the metrics.
Yes.
So I think a great place to start with this is, you know, maybe you look up the match that, you know, matches that you weren't really happy at, and you look at where the top guys placed. And then maybe you see like, okay, the top guy shot 165 alphas, 25 Charlies, and 2 deltas. And maybe a no shoot, but he made it up. And then you had maybe, I don't know, 110 alphas and maybe 80 something Charlies. So it's like, okay, that's a great place to start. Like, I am not sticking enough alphas. I'm not hunting enough alphas in this match. Or maybe the guy that won, and this is typically the case, like not only did he shoot more alphas, but he shot it faster than you. So start looking at, all right, how do I get faster? What does this need to feel like? And I think like the speed thing, that definitely gets a lot of people definitely messed up a lot of the time. Like, well, going faster than what they're comfortable with.
Yes. And it's like people trying to mimic your draw, right? It's, yep. It's what they don't see is the process to get there. All they see is like, if he can do it, I can do it. Yes, you're not wrong by saying that, but they don't understand the length of time and process drive her that got you there specifically.
Yep.
And another thing people, and we talk about this now, is comparing yourself to other shooters is a good metric for where you stand in the grand scheme of things. It shouldn't be, you know, the silver lining in which where you're at currently. And what I mean by that is me comparing to you, Nick, right? There's some things I'm better at. There's some things I'm worse at. But me trying to compare the things I'm worse at to the things you're good at is a bad metric to do. Because then you're like, well, the gap is so broad, I don't even know where to begin. It's like, well, first off, stop comparing yourself to other people. When you compete, it should be against yourself. Especially if you're at a level where you're, let's be honest, if you're not in the top 5, top 10 in the nation, like, you probably don't need to take my advice on this. but for those everywhere else, it's one of those things where like you're fighting yourself majority of the time. So if you're able to keep your videos, metrics, and like you're saying, data that even matches give you, and compare yourself to your past self, that's going to be a better metric than comparing like me and Nick together.
Yeah, yep. I think you're exactly right. You have to have a goal, right? So the setting where what does success look like, I think, is benchmarking off other people. Not necessarily comparing yourself, but benchmarking off, all right, this is what success is just in the grand scheme of things. But then, yeah, if you're walking away from every match comparing how you performed against everybody else at the match, you're not going to make the progress for yourself that you need to be making. But I do think it's important to have a benchmark, but you have to be realistic about that too. I mean, I, you know, early in my development, I was benchmarking myself off like trying to move like JJ Rakaza.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well,
right. Exactly.
Are you the same height? You have the same legs? You're like,
no. Yeah. I'm 6'3". I'm built like a fucking spider. I can't move for shit. I've got the knees of a 35-year-old guy who grew up snow skiing. So like, no, I could, I'm never going to move like him. So being realistic about what the benchmark is not as much like an individual skill thing. To your point, it's not like I want to be able to move like him. It's higher level benchmarking. So it's how many points in a match should I be getting? That kind of stuff. A lot less like I need to be moving from position 1 to position 2, just like that guy. So being realistic about what that benchmark is, I think, is the first step. And then, yeah, it's developing yourself.
So would you guys agree, like the guy who's, say, the last 4 matches he shot, he's like, man, I tried to go so fast and everything just felt crazy. So like, to me, that is probably one of the biggest issues that people have, right? They go shoot a match, they think that, or they get the feeling of like everything felt rushed, right? And if you're off to the side looking at them, maybe they're like, you know, not bagging on like C-class dudes, but if it's like a C-class dude, you're like, oh, that was pretty slow. But to him, it felt so fast and he couldn't like comprehend, you know, what to do at that pace because he just doesn't have the bandwidth yet. you know, going that at speed. You know, maybe he's trying to go at someone else's pace. Like maybe he just watched Jeff go and is like, okay, I need a 19-second run. But that's not really in the cards for him. So 19 seconds felt insanely fast. So if that's you, like, what are some things that that person needs to do in their training, in their dry fire and both in live fire? And I get it. Like, it's a really open-ended question, but I feel like it would be a good place to go.
Well, it's you can't go down the rabbit hole without an open-ended question, right? So it's one part of it, too, is especially in a match setting, you shouldn't try to control your speed, you know. As one famous character said, let it go. But essentially, it's you should not be trying to match someone else's pace. Once again, you're comparing yourself to others. You should just shoot the match you're more than capable of. If you're trying to test a couple things you're trying out in dry fire and you need to test a little speed, right? You don't go full retard and go to 100%, right? Like, if you've always been competing at 80%, I'm going to say, and I don't mean like metrics of like classification, I meant like your ability. Maybe bump it up by 5%, right? You think your 100% is giving it all, maybe just stay at that 100% and see what happens. But if you're crashing and burning, you're outrunning your headlights, and it's not that you need to slow down. You probably need to shift your focus elsewhere besides speed, right? Am I really getting that nickel-sized dot on the brown paper that I need to be aiming at? Did my dot actually arrive there? Is my grip good, right? Where you should be pressing your speed is in training, right? You should train to fail, and you should fail often enough to where, like, okay, I am outrunning my headlights, but this is the speed in which I need to fail at, and I need to fail successfully at. And just get your body used to that speed, and sometimes everything will catch up, right? So, for instance, doubles is a great example. Like, cool, everyone wants to do pedo splits, right? Which is great. It's and essentially what you're trying to accomplish, so you can actually see what's going on with your shooting. Some people can't do that. Some people can't even get to that sub 18 for those. When I say pedo splits, is, you know, minors.
Sub 18.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's. But the thing is where were you previously? If I was only doing 0.3 splits and now I'm doing 0.2, 0.25, and that feels fast and uncontrolled, good, right? That's a good thing. Like, now, yep. Always try and focus on getting those metrics and writing them down if you have to. So that way you can compare yourself. Previously, it was like, well, you're not talking about when you first started shooting and you were only doing 0.5 or 1 second splits. It's easy to forget about how you started shooting versus comparing yourself like a month ago. Those metrics are complete two different things. So to your original question, like in practice, it should be, I like mixing a little bit of a confidence booster, but also running off the rails at the same time. Like, I need to know what I'm capable of. So that way, if I have to perform at that level, I know where I have to find that nice median that I'm not tripping over myself, not throwing deltas or mics, but like I'm just on the cusp of, like, you know, the alpha Charlie perf on a lot of things, where like my shots are opening up because I'm pushing so fast versus I'm just throwing it, I'm missing steel. Like, I'm missing what I'm supposed to be aiming at and just outrunning my headlights. I know it's a very open-ended answer, but a lot of it comes down to tailor the things you failed at in the match, get confident at those things, and then speed up the things you're really good at, and then start speeding up the things you failed at. But do this over time, right? And that's the ticket, is repetition over time will get you the results you want.
If you had to put a percent on it in terms of how much faster you need to go, say I'm comfortable shooting my 80%, or maybe pick a lower number. I'm comfortable shooting at 50% speed. Like, I could plug alphas all day long at 50%. How much do I need to take it up to kind of inoculate myself to the way that speed feels, to open up more bandwidth, to be able to process more and see faster? just generality.
You know? No, I get it. Because, you know, we're talking in metrics that people might not understand, right? Because everyone learns differently. Like, I'm a visual person, so I will learn by visually and doing, right? There's also like intrinsic, or people who can read will, you know, absorb things much faster compared to visual people.
People who can read, so not Nick.
Yeah. The trick is, and I hate this answer, but it depends, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about it depends, like my metric of bumping it up by like 1 or 2% is probably bumping it up 5 to 10% to someone else. I think a lot of it comes down to just your history, your athleticism, because that's important when USPSA is moving and shooting. Like, you can actually beat a lot of people just by if you just constantly walk and shoot.
For sure.
Like, but then to get better, you actually have to like almost start running and shooting.
I think that's a good point too. I mean, for a guy who's trying to get his 1.5 second draw down to a 1 second draw, taking off a 10th every time is a big deal. For a guy who's trying to get his 0.6 down to a 0.4, taking off a couple 100ths is a big deal. So it is relative.
And it's in a lot of people, it's kind of a trap. Anytime you start a new hobby or sport, you will grow much faster in the very beginning and your results will be much greater. And then when you start chipping away, getting higher and higher, it's smaller gains, right? It's like when you get a 315 bench for the first time. Okay, now I'm not going to just jump to 350, right? That's not going to happen. I'm going for 317, 320. That's a small increment versus like first starting out like, okay, 145, right? It's a huge metric, and it applies to shooting too. Your draw, cool. If your first round engagement from 7 yards is, you know, 2.5 seconds, good. That's a great starting metric, right? Now let's bump it down by 0.2. Are you consistently getting alphas in a generalized circle, right? Okay, bump it down by 0.2, right? But like you were saying, once you get down to like the 1 to 1.5 second draw to first round engagement alpha from 7 yard, you don't go down by 0.2 anymore. It's almost like a 0.05. Like, now we're talking in the hundredths of time versus tenths. Even more so for the people who are freaky, you know, get down to the 0.6s, 0.8s. That's not built by going from 1.5 to 0.6. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, so it's one of those things where initially you'll get a greater result back, but then over time you have to chip away at it, right? Progress is not a linear graph. Progress is more of like peaks and valleys, right? You're going to go up to a peak and then come down to a valley. You're going to go up to a peak and it should be a gradual increase, but there's going to be times where you just flatline and then your valley is going to be lower than the peak you were previously at. That's just called life.
Yep.
Well, for me, it depends heavily on how consistent I'm being with it too, right? If I'm consistently hammering on it for a week, I'll make great progress. And it's not like riding a bike. Shooting is not like riding a bike. There are other sports that I feel like that are like this, some to a lesser extent, but shooting, particularly pistol shooting, I've found if I miss a week, I'm going two steps back.
Yeah, you can't miss a week.
Really consistent. Really
consistent. And that's a part of the process, like, is being consistent, right? And you know, everyone's human, right? Yes, I'll miss a day or two. And like you were saying, I notice a huge difference when I haven't touched a gun for a day versus when I'm consistently hitting it every day for a month, right? It's that nice saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. That definitely applies to this sport.
1,000%. 1,000%. So when we talk about going fast, is that shooting fast or is that fast transitions, fast movement, fast entries, stuff like that? Because I feel like a lot of the time people, you know, they hear people like us talk about like, hey, you should just go faster. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean shooting faster or does that mean doing other things faster? And I think a lot of the time people take that as like, I'm just going to pull the trigger faster. Is that what they should be doing?
The biggest time wasters in order. Your biggest time waster is movement. Your second time waster is transitions. And the last place and how you save the least amount of time is your splits. Right? So if you can work on being faster movement wise, even if that means you're moving and shooting versus being static, you're still moving to the end point. And your transitions, I guarantee you'll get better match results than you trying to get, you know, 0.14 splits on every target, right? It's okay. So let's do some simple math, right? El Prez, or let's just go, El Prez, right? Turn draw 2-2-2, reload 2-2-2. If I try and, try and shave off 0.05 seconds per shot, like it's going to be completely different than if my transition now goes from a 1 second per target. It's slow, don't get me wrong. Now I bump it down to half a second, right? So now I'm saving half a second in between each transition versus me trying to say 0.05 on the split. Like the math will math if you just write it down. A lot of classifications, like you can write down what your draw is, what your reload generally is, and it'll give you what your split and transitions generally need to be. And it's much slower than people think. It really is. You just need to do the math on it to realize, okay, I could still get a GM score with a 1.2 draw, but these are the splits and transitions I need.
Yes. And the transitions, man, I think people waste a ton of time on the transitions. And you'll see people like try to send like a really sporty split. And because they're sending a really sporty split, like they feel like they're going faster than what they can process. And they end up hanging out on that target for longer than they should. And so their transition time ends up being significantly longer. Whereas in practice, if they just focused on, you know, plug two alphas and then like immediately, you know, get off of that thing. So like take it back a little bit, like have some sort of process for that, right? So if you're sending two shots at it on the trigger break, that's your cue to like put your eyes not only on the next target, but very specifically where you want the bullets to go. So like having your eyes land on a target quickly and having the gun show up, you know, to a very precise place. It's so much better than just working on splits, trying to go from a 20 to a 15 split in terms of what you're capable of.
You're wasting time trying to get a faster split. Now, if your splits are 0.5, by all means,
sure,
bring them down, right? And obviously that depends on how far away the target is, but people fall into a trap of, hey, there's a 30 meter target, all right, you know, 0.35 split, cool. But then they'll also do a slow transition, right? Far target, yep, got the alpha, and then they'll transition at that same speed, whereas it needs to be alpha, transition. Like, it needs to be instant. You need to transition like you're doing an El Prez drill, regardless of the distance of the targets, right?
Yes.
Like, transitions always need to be fast and consistent versus your transition speed changing all the time. Right.
Yep.
And there's ways you can practice that. There's I like Accelerator, honestly speaking, because it gets not only are you mixing up the split times, but the transitions are so easy that you're having the same transitions from target to target. Right. El Prez or what's the half version where it's only just 2-2-2?
Blake drill.
I really like the Blake drill. And all you do is you set it up like you normally would, meter between these targets. Cool. Get your time, get your transitions down. All right. Now bump it to 1.5, right? Spread out those outer targets, but you're trying to make the same time happen, right?
Cool. You mean in terms of the transition times in between.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. I'm not saying the splits need to be different, but the transition times should be the same. And then, okay. Yep. I'm doing okay at this. I get 80-90% of the reps I'm getting successfully. Cool. Bump it up to 2 meters, right? And it's good if you're only 7 or 10 yards away, because the closer you are to the target, the further the transition is going to be. So it's really forcing yourself to, like, I don't want to use the term whip the gun because, like, people will view that differently. Like, when I say whip the gun, it means just move the gun where my eyes are looking because of my eyes snap to the target, like, instantly versus throwing my gun and blowing past the target. So there's multiple drills out there that can really help you speed up your transitions.
Yep. Yeah. Movement. I think we beat the transition horse to death. How about movement? Where do we?
We can keep going about transitions. So
movement. You need to get faster at movement. What's some things people need to look at in terms of, like, all right, I'm slow at movement. Let's break this down. Is it entries? Is it exits? Is it, you know, the unmounted movement where I'm, you know, running from one spot to another, which I think people waste time on all of these. But let's start off with, like, unmounted movement. What's some things that they need to focus on to maybe make that faster?
Shoulder level is a big thing I've noticed. I like using a term called peacocking. So what people do is you'll run and people naturally drop lower than what they're used to standing. And what they'll do is they'll run to a spot, and then when they start getting into their entry or into position, they'll immediately stand up, right? And so, like, I know you said transition, but a lot of time is how you're moving from area to area, or how you're running from area to area, your shoulder level should stay that height throughout the entire course. That's something that is going to require you to record yourself, because most people will think, I'm going faster than I really am, and then the timer tells you you suck. And then also a video of you being like, oh, you know, I'm running like this, but the second I get into position, I'm wasting time standing up. Right. Yep. I'm not keeping the bend in my knees. And then by standing up, now generally people will drop back down when they're exiting. Right. And so now you're like, you're wasting time by changing your level in which you're shooting. By level, I mean height in which you're shooting, versus just staying a consistent and smooth, right, level the entire time, movement wise. So it's going to feel weird. Like, you can do your dry fire regardless of what you have set up, but start doing the dry fire you have while kind of it's the same height in which you run. It's going to feel weird because your knees and hips are going to be much lower than you normally would. But the point of this is getting you moving and shooting at that height and building it into your body, so you don't feel the need just to stand straight up every time you dry fire. Because I guarantee you, most people who are dry firing static, which you should do, are standing way too tall. Because if then they had to move left, right, forward, back, I bet you they really couldn't because of how straight up and down they are.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement there. I think with the unmounted movement thing, what I see a lot of is people not running as hard as they possibly could. Say you're running, 10, 15 yards from position to, or position A to position B. You see people kind of like lackadaisically running. And so, like, I'll be real, I find myself guilty of this sometimes. And so if I feel like I'm doing that in my training, I'll throw up a camera, like, video myself doing this. And it's like, all right, I'm freaking being lazy on the running part again. So, like, I need to get my ass in gear. So, like, one thing that I try to do with this is I try to create, like, a cue in my head to where, dude, if it doesn't feel like I am giving it all I've got in terms of, like, just the running piece, I'm not moving hard enough.
Yeah, you gotta have that.
That you think about too?
It's explosive energy, right? And this is kind of where the athleticism part comes in. Like, I can only get you to explode into and out of, you don't really want to explode into a position, but out of a position so much that, like, the limitations at that point is just your body, right? I can give you all the cues you need, but if your body actually can't physically explode out of a position, like, that's going to be your next step, right? But for the most time, like, the cues I give myself are when I do, you know, our walkthrough. And then part of the mental rehearsals I have is I know for a second when I end on this target in this array, even if I'm moving and shooting it, I then need to explosively go left. I need to explosively go front. I need to then push as hard as I can with my foot that I have the most weight on, which usually is the outside foot, rotate my hips and run like a motherfucker, right? And like, even if it's like two or three steps, and that's where people get a trap in, we're like, well, it's only two or three steps. It's like, okay, cool. You could have done that in 1 second and you did it in five. Like that's a lot of time you're losing. They'll take like the shorter parts and not be as explosive as they're doing the longer parts.
Yes. I think another thing I see people do too, and this is like serious shooting nerd stuff, but like as they're, say they're leaving a position, instead of like trigger break exit. So on your last shot, you break the trigger, you know that you're done, you know, engaging that last target. Instead of like trigger break exit and then immediately snap their eyes to the spot that they're going, they just kind of just like glance in the direction. Right. So instead of like being very, very aggressive with their eyes, like it's just kind of a lackadaisical thing where they just kind of like, you know, they're okay, I'm done shooting that target, kind of sort of just look in the direction and nothing is intentional about it. I think that's one thing that people can definitely work on.
It's, I've always viewed, okay, so we always talk about being target focused and looking at the smallest possible point you can. We're up close, it's smaller, further back, it's kind of larger. I try to have that same mentality for movement, right? Where specifically on the ground do I want to land at, right? Because sometimes in this sport, the window you have between barriers is only the gun's width, right? Or maybe a little larger. And if I am off that point by like a couple inches, I then now have to move or lean out of my original position to get the shot I want, right? And so we just talk about, well, most people make the mistake of looking at their next target when there's movement involved. Now, if you literally take a step back and your next target is what you're engaging, by all means do that. But what I'm talking about is if you're like three or more strides away, you should be looking, snapping your eyes to the ground and exactly where you want. And then about maybe two strides away, because your feet will naturally go. You walk, right? You walk all day. Like it's just get there. You don't have to stare at the ground. It's like driving a motorcycle. You look at the ground, right? When you're about to like make a turn, you'll just crash your motorcycle. Same thing. Like you look at the hood of your car, like, yeah, you're going to crash it. But what I'm saying is look at a point in the ground, try and find like a leaf, right? A nail, some mark on the actual border that like during my mental rehearsals, I know like, hey, after I take this shot, I'm looking for this one specific area I've already know that is the where I can shoot this next array. And then about two strides out, I shift my focus from where I'm running to a target, and my feet will naturally go in those two strides where I want them to go because I made it such a point to get there.
Yep. I think too, like building this into your stage plans. So as an example, Jeff, the last match that we shot, stage one, and this is kind of like very Rain Man of me, I could legit draw you all the stages that we shot that day. Like that's how much I...
Oh, well I wanted to get into this later.
Yeah.
This is the mental part I actually want to get, but continue with your movement.
Yeah, yeah. So like stage one, where we started uprange and then you had to regress back in the opposite direction. So you're basically running backwards, right? There were those three open targets on the right, and there were two far ones that were kind of like, I think they were like a stacker. And then there was one kind of a closer one lower to the ground. And so, you know, during my stage plan, I was like, okay, I think I'm comfortable shooting those open or the first two targets from this spot. So I just looked at the ground. I'm like, oh, the two pieces of wood from the, you know, the markers or whatever, like there's a nail right there. Like I'm just going to, as I turn back and run to that spot, I look for that nail. That's exactly where my left foot is going to plant. And as soon as my left foot plants there, I'm going to look up at the target and it's like, bam, there's the two open targets. I shot those walking backwards and it worked out pretty good. But like I, during my walkthrough, I'm looking for spots like that. And I think, you know, some of this is going to have to do with comfort. Like I talked about, like, you know, during my walkthrough, I looked at those targets. I'm like, okay, I could shoot those while backing up from about right here. Anything outside of that, I'm probably going to want to stop. This way, you know, I can shoot good points. So I'm going to stop right here, shoot these things on the move on the way back. This will put me in a different position to where it'll open up that other target and then the target in back of that, et cetera. So, you know, are you guys looking for that stuff too in your walkthroughs?
Yes. To the point where there was, I mentally rehearse exactly. So I don't rehearse where my feet are always going to be while I'm running, right? That's just, it's more so where do I have to transition from sprinting or moving really freaking fast to then slowing down and getting into a good shooting position, whether that's static, which I try to avoid, or at least slowing down enough to where I can shoot the points I need in a fast time. Yep. And mental rehearsal plays a big part of this. To the point where I was shooting at a higher level match, and there was two shooting areas, and you had to run from doing an array on the area, the first area, and then cross a larger area into the next shooting area. Well, there is a stomper in between the areas, right, that would activate then a swinger in the second area. I mentally rehearsed that stage so hard, but I forgot to include the stomper, and you know what I did? I blew right past that motherfucker.
No.
And then it's me and the RO having a conversation that like some stages had rules you couldn't go backwards. And I was like, can I go back and stomp that? And so now I just wasted 15 seconds on a stage. It was a whole thing. But what I'm getting at is, yes, I try and find spots that are very noticeable, right? A nail may help you, but it has to be kind of a unique nail because mm-hmm. most of these borders are nailed down and all the nails look the same. Right. So yeah. At least like or the point right between the two nails, like you have to find something, a cue, if you will, that like in your mental rehearsal, you're like, OK, I'm going to smash these three targets. I know for a fact I need to hit that nail that's like six paces behind me. You don't have to say six paces. All you know is you have to explode and get to that fucking nail as fast as possible and then switch your eyes to the targets and then just get after it.
Well, that's, I think, thinking that granular about what movement, breaking movement away from it being target focused versus where I am in the world geographically is important. I mean, that's in my first few matches, it was very much sprint until you can start to see that target and then slow down and then you're blowing past your position. And it's all very much, it's thinking about it essentially one dimensional, right? It's all about how do I get to where I can see this target, as opposed to breaking the movement part completely out of the targets and the shooting part and thinking about it in a compartmentalized, essentially. And then breaking that movement down even further to not only do I need to stop there, but I need to be slowing down here. This is when I hit the brakes so that I can stop there, because you still see a lot of guys overrun positions and have to lean back and come back to the spot that they blew past. And so I think being that, compartmentalizing those two things is really important.
It's one of the, this reminds me of everyone knows what Burkett drills, right? Are it's essentially taking a somewhat complex thing and breaking it down into smaller segments. Like for explosive exits, right? In dry fire, the only thing I have done really for explosive exits was put two cones out, right? Enough far away that I have to like burst out. I'll have a dot on a target, and then on the timer, I'm not pulling the trigger or anything. Like on the timer, I'm aiming at the target. Beep goes off. I immediately look at the next cone and explode out. And that's it. That's all I do, right? Because you're breaking down an entire thing where you're supposed to be moving into a new position, right? And I really love doing that because then it starts training my body of trigger break exits is essentially what we're trying to work on right now, but without actually focusing on shooting, right? Because a lot of people will focus on like, Well, no, my dot just fucked up, and I knew that wasn't an alpha that I just smacked on the target. It's like, no, that's not the point of the drill. The point of the drill is to get that explosive movement. And then the same thing on entries. Like, you can do the same exact thing on entries. Did you come into that next cone so hard that the dot took so long to settle that you just wasted time, right? One thing I like doing is setting up a barrier of some sort. A see-through barrier is what I really like to use on entries. Putting a cone right on the edge and a target on the other edge. And so I'll work on my entries where I want to hit that cone, but at the same time, I need to be presenting my gun while I'm breaking the barrier. So the second my pistol clears the barrier, even if my body's still not stopping, it's slowing down, but I'm still moving, I can crack shots off at that target the second my pistol clears. I'm not waiting to get to the cone, presenting, then shooting. It's kind of a combination of entering, slowing down my speed, and then as I'm getting slowly into position and breaking that barrier, cracking those shots off. And this is what we're talking about, like the movement part of things, right? It's a lot of things are wasted in that form.
Yep. So I would say, like, most people waste time in the exit because of the stuff that we just chatted about. Less chat about entries. I see people wasting time there as well. So maybe they're one end of the spectrum. They're running to a spot, finding the target, you know, when they get to that spot, and then lifting the gun up and shooting. The other end of the spectrum is they're pre-aiming the gun maybe 5 to 6 steps before they're even into the entry. They're like, yep, slowly gliding into that position like a, you know, a freaking goose on the water. But it's like, you know, you're just wasting time because you're pre-aiming the gun way too soon. So what are some things that we can do, you know, in terms of dry fire, live fire? Like, are there drills that these people should be setting up to start figuring this stuff out? Should they be recording themselves, et cetera?
I am a huge fan, and this also, I've learned this through music and lifting. Recording yourself is a free and very valuable tool, right? It does take some, like, setting up just a little bit, but, like, everyone has a tripod. Everyone has some sort of shelf or something, like, they can prop their phone up on, right? It's recording yourself. Like, the video doesn't lie, right? The thing to think about too is you are your harshest critic. So, like, don't ever watch yourself and be like, man, I kind of suck. It's like, no, like, I did this good, but I did this bad, right? That's the second part of this. In terms of for dry fire, and what you were saying is presenting the gun too early, I will make it a cue that, like, once I know I'm like the 2 paces I need to, my feet are going to do the thing. When my eyes are going up is also when I'm presenting the gun. And generally speaking, that always works out that I'm just on the other side of the barrier or whatever obstacle I need to get to, and it lines up perfectly. That works for me. It may not work for everyone. Some people are one step, right? Some people don't even look at the ground at all, right? I'm sure there's people out there that are completely different. But I would say if you don't know where to start, that's at least a good starting point in figuring out what works for you. In terms of dry fire, what have you worked on, Nick or Max, to, like, really help people, like, with their explosive energy?
I mean, so filming myself was still the only way that I make progress there, right? So for movement in particular. Really specifically for movement only, honestly, because I have in my head, I think I'm going really fast, and then I watch any match footage, any dry fire footage, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, man, get the lead out, gas pedal's on the right, like, what's going on? So for me, though, in dry fire and live fire, it's for explosive movement stuff, it's really small drills. If I'm trying to work on it in a large array stage sort of drill, there's too much stuff that I start focusing on. I start focusing on the shooting. Even if I tell myself, don't think about the shooting, I start seeing myself chucking Charlies and Deltas, and then I get in my head like, oh, you need to slow down, forgetting that this is a movement drill. So really focusing on small specific drills that are focused on either explosive exits, explosive movement, but keeping it really simple in that regard. Like I said, I have a really hard time just mentally divorcing what the gun is doing and the shooting part from the moving. If I see myself shooting like shit, even like I said, even if I've told myself don't worry about it, I get in my head about it. So keeping the shooting stuff really simple, not giving myself any challenges on the shooting part is also a big thing. And then, I mean, it's repetition. Do it, video it, go back and look at the video, get in my head and go, you have to move faster. And doing that over and over until I'm actually seeing some results. Cause I've also found if I do, you know, 5 or 6 reps and then keep telling myself, you got to go faster, that was slower. And then going and watching the video, I'm not making a lot of progress there either. So, but I'm also, you know, realistic about, again, my explosive movement isn't going to look like Christian Saylor's explosive yeah. movement, right? So being realistic about what my benchmarks are and working towards those and not comparing to what I think it needs to look like has been important. So, and that's what's changed for me in the last year or so is being mindful about what the timer is telling me for my own self. So keeping, like, I have a lifting journal now. Like, I have to write this shit down or I'll forget it. So writing down what this stuff, what the metrics are actually looking like, and trying to move the needle that way, has been big for me. I don't do enough of it in dry fire, to be honest with you, enough movement stuff. I don't have that much space in my house to do big movement stuff, but there are entries and exits that I can do at home, but a lot of it is done at the range for me.
Yep. So I would say for me, like on the entry side of the house, I am very like self-aware of my tendencies, what I typically like will want to do without, you know, thinking about it. And for me, it's like, I am one to pre-aim the gun early and step into position nice and soft. And it's like, yep, that felt so soft. It's so good right now. I am pre-aimed so early and I could shoot so accurately, like, but that is not the way. Right. And so I've noticed that, like, and made a conscious effort to, you know, try to like push myself up to the other end of the spectrum, which it never ends up like just getting into a position and then bringing the gun up for me. But like being aware of that and then training with other people, especially ones that like I, you know, hold in high regard, like training with like I trained with Mason, and he was like, at one point he was like, okay, this like moseying to a spot is not gonna fucking cut it, what you're doing. And I'm like, dude, just take that target stick, like take the stick that holds it, like, and smack me in the back of the knees every time I do that. Like, I would legit almost pay someone to do that, like just nail me for it, just so I can like learn very quickly and get over it. And so like, I've been trying to basically run to a point to where I'm like, okay, I have 2 to 3 steps left, preferably 2, and have the gun pre-aimed on, like, you know, as soon as I start orienting my hips and getting the gun up, which is typically 2 to 3 steps before I get into that position, and like force myself to do that rather than like 4, 5, 6, 7 steps before I get into that position. So I think, you know, being self-aware of what you're doing is a massive piece of this puzzle.
Dude, there's a video of like, so I grew up competition water skiing, and there's a guy who used to train with his dad, and his dad would be in the boat with a paintball gun. And when he was screwing shit up, his dad would peg him with a paintball gun. And I swear to God, if I had somebody who would just stand behind the line and when I'm running like a piece of shit would just pop me with a paintball gun, and it would make a huge difference.
We can make that happen.
I feel like we could.
So there's a flip side of the coin on a conversation, right? Because I really like being devil's advocate, because sometimes you actually need to ask yourself why you do the things you do, because you may be doing them wrong, right? So recording yourself, right? When I say recording myself, I don't record a single run and go watch it, right? I don't record myself a single run, go watch it. I don't do that. I do, like you were saying, 5 to 7 reps, right? And see what I was doing consistently over those 5 to 7 reps, and then make note of that and try and change it for the next 5 to 7 reps. The flip side of this too is I try not to spend more than 5 to 7 minutes on a single dry fire drill, because I can spend 30 minutes doing the same freaking drill, right? But the only way it's going to get fixed is over time and me trying to spend my entire dry fire session, which mine usually lasts only 30-ish minutes, on that one thing isn't going to make me better at that one thing. Now I just lost all this time to work on other things I need to work on by getting angry at the thing I suck at, right?
Yeah. So it's funny you say that. So for every dry fire that I do, I start every one with trigger control at speed, because I have found for myself that I am not honest with myself about what my grip needs to be.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yep.
Right. So, but 5 minutes of trigger control at speed gets me in the mindset of, no, you do need to be gripping the shit out of the gun. Be honest with yourself. So when I say, and that's what I get out of videotaping a run where I think I'm running really hard, and then I look at the video and go, no, you're not. And then doing it a few more times individually to get myself in the mindset of, no, here's what moving fast feels like. Because I think when I go out there cold or dry fire, well, either way, when I'm cold, I don't know what fast feels like. I think I'm going fast, but I'm not, until I actually can watch myself go fast and can go, okay, no, that was fast. Remember what that feels like. So that's the benefit I get from it. But it's not an entire range day of like checking every single run, but it is a like reset, mental reset, figure out what speed feels like, figure out what grip feels like, and then everything else will be a little bit more productive once I actually remember what it feels like to do it right.
There's a couple times what I have done is I have recorded myself doing whatever array comfortably, and since we're on movement, we'll include that, a movement array comfortably, right? I can get 90% of total points, like I'm moving just fine, and then I will record a run that I know I cannot keep up with. My speed, just my sole focus is how fast can I get this done, regardless of points, regardless of how well my body was positioned. Like, I want to go off the rails on purpose, obviously not being unsafe, but on purpose. And what I like to do is comparing the two runs and what did I have in common between those two things, right? And then what I like to do is I like to find the speed between those two things, right? So now I'm going to be slightly uncomfortable going faster than my comfortable pace, but I'm not running off the rails, right? So it's a weird experimentation you have to do. And I feel like, especially in this sport, since everyone's so different and there's so many ways to do things, that you have to experiment with the way you work and the way you tick. And this is part of the process of doing it. That works for me. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying it's going to work for everyone, but you have to have two sides of the coin of, this is speed will never work for me, but this works really comfortably for me. All right, now I need to have the hairs on the back of my neck standing out just a little bit and be slightly uncomfortable. And that's probably the speed I need to be going, whether it's shooting, movement, transitions, the entire gambit.
I agree. 1,000%. It reminds me, I had a private class. I'm not sure if I told this story on here before, but private class with someone, we were shooting this transition drill, and I was trying to show them, like, hey, here's my comfortable speed. And I think it was like, I don't know, 5 seconds for an example. And then like, hey, here's my, like, this is going to feel uncomfortable for me. I'm probably going to make some mistakes, because I feel like this is going to be at a pace where I feel uncomfortable. However, I can still see what's happening, and shot it in like 4 seconds. And then they shot it in like 8 seconds. And it was like, how the hell do I get there? I'm like, okay, I'm going to shoot it in 6 seconds, and you are going to replicate that speed despite what the hits look like, or despite what your sights look like while you're shooting this. I demoed it like 6 seconds. Yep. All right. That's the pace that you're going to go. I don't care if your sights are there or not. I did it a couple times, and I'm like, okay, on this next run, I don't want you to slow down. I just want you to look at the spots that you want to hit. And it was like, alpha, 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 ding, alpha. And it was like, what the hell just happened? So I think, you know, there's definitely something to be said for going at an uncomfortable pace, which is one that you can actually see what's happening, not like completely off the rails, like, oh shit, I didn't see that target at all type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, 8 seconds not going to go down to 4, but being reasonable about what you can do.
And that's everything we're talking about is mainly comes down to a self-reflection on what's reasonable, right? Like, we can give you all the par times in the world, but like, if you're not at that level, or hell, maybe you're at even a higher level, right? It's one of those things where the self-assessment and getting your own metrics is where, if you haven't started anywhere, that's where you should start. Another thing I think that plays a huge role into overall getting, you know, this entire conversation, getting out of a slump, is the mental game, right? We a lot of people don't talk about like being mentally resilient or any of that crap. But the thing is, what's really helped me is, since I am my own worst critic, I like to switch up the way I think about things, right? The classic is, you know, you give a kid a ball and say, don't drop the ball, right? And that's what they think of, don't drop the ball. So now all they're focusing on right now is not dropping the ball. What you should say, swap it. Hey, grip this as hard as you can.
What you do.
Yes, yep. Exactly. You tell them to grip it as hard as they can. And the only thing now they're going to focus on is gripping that as hard as they can. They've erased the negative thought of dropping it by solely doing this, by gripping it. The same thing happens with shooting, right? You can only focus mentally on one, potentially two things at a time. If you're trying to focus on three or more things, everything gets watered down, right? So it's one of those things where, like, what do you need to focus on in that moment? Is it your target focus? Is it your movement? Is it your grip? Well, that's for up you to decide where you want to put your mental capacity. And then switching on how you view things, right? Saying, like, oh, I shot like shit today. Like, okay, that's fine. But what'd you do great? Tell me all the things you did great at, right? Yeah, well, I just had a bad match. Or, yeah, you know, stage four, I always fuck up stage four. Okay, you're going into stage four now, and you've already fucked yourself by saying, I'm really bad at this. And it's like, no, you need you don't need to have like a constant, you don't need to be unicorns and rainbows, right? You don't need to be a happy-go-lucky person. But what you need to do is focus on the things you're doing in the now and not what you just previously did or what you try and plan to do for the next few stages. Like, it needs to be one of those things where, like, you do the walkthrough. You get your cues, you get all the positions you need, you do this, blending positions and all that, and then you need to get your mental rehearsals in, right? The mental cues and now your repetitions that you're getting your mental rehearsals. Because just like you did said, Nick, you could count on stage one, and I bet you could recite the entire thing to me because you did all these things because you knew the course and how you're going to shoot it before you even actually shot it, right? Yep. Most people who struggle at matches can't tell me the last stage they shot in detail. They can't. And most of the time it's because they didn't even know the stage they were shooting because they didn't rehearse in their head enough of what they're about to do.
1,000%. And this is where you'll see and hear. Really good shooters have very, very different things that they come up with for this specific thing, like rehearsing a stage, whether it's how they go through it or their mental game plan, etc. And I think this is something that people have to do for themselves in terms of, all right, what works for me? So, like, I can speak from my own experience here. What works for me is going to the safe table, getting some trigger control at speed. Whether it's, you know, if it's a local, I typically don't need to do that. But like at Nationals, I started figuring this out, unfortunately, on like day two. But like day two, I go to the safety table, right? Do trigger control at speed. And I see the dot, like, you know, do that J hook thing. And I'm like, nope, you need not to hold a gun like that. Like, you will hold a gun like this. And just tell myself, like, yep, this is what it feels like. This is how you like smash through the trigger. That's what target focus should look like. So like building a process for yourself in terms of, you know, this is what is going to keep me on the rails, I think is a very, very good idea. Another thing that I like to do is I will rehearse the stage plan. And now when I say stage plan, I don't mean just like, hey, that target, and then that one, and I'm going to run over here. Like, I'm thinking about like exactly how I want it to go. Not like, oh God, that was a partial over there. Like, don't fuck that up. Because as Jeff said, like, if you say to yourself, like, hey, don't fuck it up, you're probably going to fuck it up. Like, you can't tell yourself not. Dude, you're going to smack Noe right in the face. And it's like, you can't tell yourself what not to do. However, you can tell yourself what to do. And so rehearsing that stage plan in your head, how you want it to go, exactly how you want it to go, to the T, down to movement, the shooting piece, where you want to hit the targets, the visual focus, like all of that stuff, how you're going to grip the gun, how you're going to draw the gun, and then go over that in your head at least 75 times. Like, dude, I could draw you all the stages that we shot. When was that match, Jeff? 2 months ago? A month ago?
Yeah, it was a month ago now, yeah.
I still remember all of them. Like, if you can't remember the stages that you shot, are you actually going over them enough times in your head? So to me, like, I mentally rehearsed that stuff at least 75 times. So much so to where I think it was stage 3. You were like, hey, when you come out of that position, just shoot that target. It was the one off to the right. It was like a low one right next to a barrel. And I was like, nah, I can't do that. And like, when I watched you do it, I was like, oh, I totally could have done that. But like when he said that, it didn't even compute because I went over this in my head so many times. Like, nope, this will be the way that I do it.
Well, there's a ton of science out there. And I'm sure, somebody like Dr. Travis Haley could explain it in science terms. But
I was married to a doctor at one point.
Yeah, intentional visualization is incredibly powerful in any athletic endeavor. I mean, intentional visualization you can almost trick your mind into, your mind views it as like it's an actual repetition if you're doing it right. To your point, Nick, it's not just visualizing what order you're going to shoot it in. It's not even visualizing how you're going to do it. It's visualizing what it needs to look like in real time, how you want it to go, and taking and paying attention to the things that you know you can do right, and setting yourself up for success too in terms of planning it correctly and planning it to a way that fits your game plan. Because we've also talked a lot about this in this podcast too. A lot of guys go and watch, even in the walkthrough, watch the guys that they think shoot well and then plan their stage plan off of those guys, or plan a stage plan that isn't realistic for them. And we could do a whole podcast on that alone. But being realistic about what your stage plan should be and then visualizing it is really powerful.
Now, I will say for newer shooters, or like, I would say maybe even B class and below, like, you should be asking questions of people who are better than you at the 100%. Match. Like, now I'm kind of at a disadvantage because I shoot wrong-handed. So most of my stage plans are going to be adjusted to fit my need. So that has actually helped me become more like figuring that out. But like, most people are right-handed. So you should try and find people who are, you know, for a fact, are probably going to win the match, or at least be the best in the squad, even if they're not shooting the same gun as you, like you can still apply what they're trying to get out at each match. Like you should use the match always, especially, I mean, level two, level three, yeah, you shouldn't be trying to learn shit there. Besides shooting at level two, level three. But at club matches, you should use the match as an opportunity to learn and grow. And then test yourself against others last. Like, learn, grow, test against yourself. Results will be the results. Like, I guarantee you, especially on the mental side, anyone who's ever been on a podium has visualized them being on that podium, right? Like, it's one of those things where they didn't get there without asking people for help, right? And I guess this actually comes back to the original question, like, I'm in a slump, what do I do? It's like, well, obviously we've been talking over an hour now, and we can keep going, like, I don't mind. It's just a matter of taking these things into account and then changing. A lot of people who get in the slump, because everyone gets in the slump, it's not just the one individual who asked the question, like, it's a temporary measure, right? You need to figure out if the process you've been doing justifies the slump. And if it not, if it does, then you need to change your process. If it doesn't, then you need to trust your process, right? Just keep chipping away at the things that you've been doing. And I guarantee you'll come out of the slump. Or if you notice a consistent pattern that's causing these things for you to slump in, well, you just found yourself homework, right? You just found yourself on the things you need to work on. And when you're working on them, not beating yourself up, right? Take the small wins when you can get them, and then take the negative stuff and just realize it's an opportunity to learn and grow, and then twist it. And like, this is making me a better person / shooter, because the mental things we're talking about doesn't apply just to shooting. Honestly, it could apply to any sport or just life in general. It's one of those things, is changing the way you are saying things and visualizing things and not being afraid to ask for help is what's more than likely going to help you get out of this slump on top of everything we just said previously.
Yep. Hey, you brought up something interesting, like talking to people at the match, you know, finding someone who's really good. One time I squatted with Chris Tilly, and dude, I felt like I should pay him at the end of this match, because I was like, I asked him so many questions. I was probably annoying, but dude, he answered everything that I asked and was like super gracious with his time. Like, hey man, when you're coming over here, like look at this, this, and this. Or when you're thinking about, you know, stage plans, like you need to keep this in mind. So I think, you know, possibly finding someone like that at a match is a really, really good idea. However, there probably could be someone that you should not listen to, and I've seen that as well. I shot a match one time. This dude, he was like, hey, he like told the entire squad, like, hey, this is my first match. I have no earthly idea what I'm doing right now, but I'm here to shoot. And this one person there was like, hey, you should, like, I'm going to come over to this spot, shoot left to right on the move, backing out of this position, then I'm going to shoot that steel on the move, and then shoot that swinger over here. And then, dude, it was so elaborate. And I brought him off to the side. I was like, yo, real talk, start right there, shoot left to right, run to that position, shoot right to left, right? And then go to that position to finish and shoot left to right, or whatever the case may be. And he was like, that simple? And I was like, yes, it needs to be that simple right now. Like, I would not think about, like, hey, I'm going to do this super elaborate stage plan. Like, try to keep it to where you're keeping it inside of your specific wheelhouse. And this is where, you know, training and all that stuff comes in, to where you kind of understand what your wheelhouse actually is. But I think keeping it inside of your wheelhouse is a very, very good idea. Kind of like Max mentioned earlier, like, man, you probably shouldn't do someone else's stage plan. You should probably do the one that you're capable of.
Yeah, I mean, there are some immutable truths, right? There are some things you don't want to waste a ton of time running back past somewhere you already ran. There are some things where, yeah, you should learn these as somebody who's never shot competitions before. There are some basic stage planning things. But yeah, when you get into the nitty gritty of it, do I want to shoot on the move like that guy? I don't know. Do I want to put myself into this really hard lean that guy can do, and not if I don't have to. I think you have to know enough about your skill level to make those distinctions. But there definitely are some things where, like, if you haven't done this before, yeah, there's asking the right questions can get you some good answers.
Yeah. So I think in the end, like, it's probably best to leave off with, people should be paying attention to their training in terms of what they're good at, what they're not good at, things that they need to work on. It should be like try to be hyper aware of things that you need to work on, and then go isolate that stuff in your practice. I think that would be a good thing for you to do. Maybe you're not fast enough. Okay, cool. Like, I'm going to step on the gas a little bit. Now my practice is going to feel uncomfortable. Hits be damned. Like, I don't really care what the hits are going to be like. I'm just going to feel like, or I'm just going to see what it feels like to go faster. Or maybe I'm, fast already, but the hits aren't there. Like, okay, now I'm going to take the time to see what it feels like to actually get the hits that I need to get. Like, what does it feel like to shoot really tight alphas on targets, et cetera? Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, and there's going to be times where you're going to go to a practice or dry fire and you're going to crush it and you're going to high five yourself. Good. There's going to be times where you're going to want to jump off a bridge. Like, that's going to happen. But just remember, if you want to jump off the bridge, at least do a flip. Like, get a positive spin out of it, all right?
Style points count for something, man.
It should be fun at the end of the day.
Yeah.
100%.
Yep. Well, I think we beat this dead horse quite a bit, and I think this was a good one, and hopefully this helps some people out. Jeff, I appreciate you guys coming on and talking this over.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, man.